Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live, not from the SBTV studios in New York, but from a rest stop off of I-81. Yours truly doing a little bit of traveling the last few days. So we'll try to bring you all the information and news and keep you updated here, and hopefully everyone can hear me okay, and hopefully everything goes well. What a week. What a week in the world of professional wrestling. We're going to be talking a little bit about some backstage heat on the Fiend angle, some backstage heat on production in the WWE, AEW crowns a new champion, Impact Invasion, the return of Sting, the return of the NWA. I leave for a week, and the world of wrestling explodes with news. So let's get right to it, and let's start with the NWA. NWA made their re-debut on YouTube, and there are a few new faces, and obviously a few faces like, well, you'll know who's gone within a couple of weeks. I don't want to say everyone who's gone, but there's a few faces that are gone. A few faces like Eli Drake, and of course Nick Aldis is still there. Mike Bennett has made his way over. However, the look has changed. Not the same location, no fans. And once again, we are in that holding pattern of how long can this continue for any federation? NWA is doing the right thing. They're putting product on, because if they don't put some product on pretty soon, people are just going to have forgotten about them. To be perfectly honest, it was starting to fade in my memory banks. So they were doing the correct thing. The trouble here, of course, is how do you make any money doing it this way? How do you pay your workers and your staff and the building? How do you do that? You don't. The answer is you don't. Right now you're going to be running in the red. And you're going to be hoping for a zillion YouTube hits, which probably isn't going to happen. It's just probably not going to happen. There's an awful lot of wrestling. You've got Monday nights. Now you got Tuesday nights, obviously, with Impact, and now with NWA. You're going to have Wednesday nights. You're going to have Friday nights. Sunday's pay-per-views. That's a lot of wrestling. Saturday night, you can watch a lot of wrestling on Access TV. So I don't know, folks. I don't know how that's going to go. As far as the actual show itself, it wasn't a tremendously different feel to the matches or anything, but it was a tremendously different look, Mike, and I'm wondering what you thought about that overall look.
Yeah, that's what drew a lot of people to it, because it had a retro feel to it, you know? And
yes.
And the thing is that's what made them special. Now they kind of homogenized and kind of it looks the same as any other wrestling show now, and maybe he felt he had to do something different. Corgan had to do something different, but it in my mind it wasn't broke. He shouldn't have tried to fix it, you know. Now, granted, some of the faces may or may not change, and we got to see what happens with, to my recollection, Aaron Stevens has not signed with anybody else, so he's still available. And, well, he's been going back and forth with AEW, but I don't think he's signed with him. So, you know, but again, I've said it before, he should have put people in the building. No, it doesn't matter what building he. It doesn't matter what building he has or whatever, what the look is. He should have put people in the building. And that's the only drawback I see there.
I agree with all of that. The look was crucially important to NWA. The retro feel and the retro look of that held a certain charm that was kind of magical. You take that away, it's not so magical. And all you're left with is it's still an old school product, but done in a new school environment, and I'm not 100% sure it holds the same charm. We'll see what ends up happening there. As far as putting people in the building, absolutely. You know, in my travels here, I've hit the following locations. I have hit Pennsylvania, has flashing lights saying if you enter Pennsylvania and you stop, prepare to be 14-day quarantined or take a COVID test on the spot because you're not going to be allowed to get out of your car here. I mean, I'm exaggerating. You can get out of your car to go to a rest stop or get gas or something, but God forbid you want to stop in a store and shop and you're 14-day quarantined unless you want to take a mandatory COVID test. So you drive through that state. Who the hell wants to stop there? We go to Maryland, lesser restrictions. Virginia, West Virginia, almost no restrictions, really. Virginia, same basic thing. I mean, they're wearing masks, but I get to North Carolina, and I stop at a store, and I would say 6 out of 10 people are not wearing masks. 6 out of 10 people don't have the masks on. They're shopping in their store without the mask. Some of them have it, but they don't have it on. Some of them have it just over their mouth, not their nose. And no one is freaking out. No one is saying, could you please put your mask on? You know, oh, my God, you're going to – hey, that person doesn't have their mask on. They're not freaking out about it. And to my knowledge, no one's dropping dead on the street. The interesting thing is you go up to Canada, and it's much like New York in the sense that in Toronto, you can be a Walmart and be open, and you can sell toys in Walmart. But if you're a toy store, you better be closed, or the Canadian police will come and close you down and put you in handcuffs. And I'm not exaggerating. They will put you in handcuffs if you dare open your store. So this is the problem that wrestling faces. Billy Corrigan doesn't know what to do. My suggestion is you go to a state that will allow you to put some people in this building. I thought you were doing it in Georgia, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, Georgia's pretty lenient with some of their rules. How come you can't put some people in the building? I walked into a Pizza Hut in North Carolina. There are people sitting down eating. And no, it's not every other booth either. People eat beans all over the place. Yeah, they say we ask you to maintain 6-foot distance. We ask you to wear a mask, but they're not forcing it. So it might be time. If Billy Corrigan is going to succeed here, you know, I think he had a chance to make a statement, and he failed, and that's a shame. Anyway, let's get on to AEW, because my goodness. Talk about a show that was filled with stuff. First, of course, we have a new AEW champion in Kenny Omega. Then we get the reveal that it was all an Impact Wrestling plot to steal the championship, which is a little bit reminiscent of what Paul Heyman did when he started ECW, if you remember. He did that with the NWA. Took the NWA title, turned it into the ECW title, and then, you know, rest is history. Now, this is obviously a work, and we have had this set up with Don Callis being on the show a couple of times previously, leading into, well, I'm just following what Kenny Omega does because we're longtime friends, into this big double cross of, no, we're going to take your belt back to Impact. And that's exactly what they're going to do. They said Tuesday night they are going to reveal what their intentions are. So obviously AEW now has a working relationship with Impact Wrestling, and the wrestlers are already tweeting, I'd like to face the Motor City Machine Guns, I'd like to face this one, I'd like to face that one. My initial thought on this is a no-lose situation for Impact. Impact has zero to lose here. They have only to gain. However, I'm not 100% sure this is a no-lose situation for AEW, and hear me out on this. I know a lot of people want this kumbaya, let's all work together as one big happy family type thing. They're doing it with NWA to an extent too. And rumors they were going to do it with the, you know, some of the Japanese federations. Here's where things might get a little convoluted. At some point in time, you're going to have to understand that the world is going to open back up again, and people are going to want to tour. And if you've got this big thing going, you're going to have the Impact people touring with them, or vice versa. And I don't know. I don't know if they just want to do TV or they want to tour. I don't know how they're going to work that out. And on top of that, you're going to obviously have to throw some of your AEW guys to the wolves, to the Impact guys, and Impact's going to have to throw some of their guys to the wolves, to the AEW guys. I don't know. My thought again is that Impact has nothing to lose, Todd, but maybe AEW does.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like you said about Impact Wrestling and AEW and NWA, It's a good idea to have, especially Impact Wrestling and AEW working together. I think it's a good move on both parties. You get to see dream matches you've never seen before, like the Motor City Machine Guns want to face this team, or an AEW or AEW tag teams want to face this team in Impact. It could go both ways.
Well, I think you're right. The fans are going to get to see certain matches that they're not going to see. But I guess it's one of those things where it would almost be like a corporation that's doing very well picking up a minor corporation that isn't doing so well and saying, well, you can merge with us and you can keep your name and everything. And okay, well, that's helping out Impact. But I don't know how many people are going to say, oh, Impact people are on AEW, I have to watch, as opposed to AEW people are on Impact, so now I have to watch. So I think it's a little bit of a lopsided partnership, Mike, in the sense that I think Impact gains more.
Well, maybe, maybe not, because think about it this way. Yeah, in terms of the mail things, Impact would gain more. But think about this. We've all said that that the weakest part of Impact right now is the women's division, right?
Yes.
Well, what happens if say Rosemary comes over, or there are 2, 3, 4, 5 ladies in Impact that would definitely add to that AEW women's division. So I don't think it's such a bad idea. They both get something out of it.
There, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that's why they did it. I think in the male competition category, AEW gains nothing, next to nothing. Maybe some dream matches, like Todd said, but those are going to be one-offs for the most part. I think that AEW was eyeing that women's division and saying, man, could we use extra bodies in our division, especially names that have already been established. We don't seem to have them. We'll bring people in and people will say, oh, yeah, she's a well-respected on the independent circuit. And no one in the world heard of her, except your hardcore wrestling fans like us. Maybe we heard of her. But your average fan is like, who? Who? I never heard of that woman in my life. Okay. Well, then you gain nothing. Now you might. With the women's division. I think that's why AEW did this. I think they tried to do it with the NWA. And when Billy Corrigan said, basically, Thunder Rosa's under contract and she's not going anywhere, we're just kind of loaning her out, I think that might have stuck in the craw of AEW saying, well, you weren't supposed to say anything. It was supposed to be kind of like we're all one big roster. And now that you've said that, maybe we'll go do something else with Impact, in which Impact invades. I think maybe they thought maybe NWA would invade and then said, if we can get Impact, look who we have. We have Anderson and Gallows, and we have quite a few top stars over there, but especially the women's division. I think Mike's right about that. They've eyed that women's division, and they were envious of it, and now they kind of have it at their disposal if they want to. And, of course, it's good for Impact because Impact could bring over Chris Jericho. Impact could bring over John Moxley. And you're going to have to watch, right? Going to have to watch. It's going to increase, put it this way, it's going to increase Impact's ratings in a very large way. Is it going to increase AEW's ratings in a very large way? Even with the women's division? I don't think so. So I think the big winner is Impact. I think you might see another 50,000 kick for AEW. You're going to see hundreds of thousands of kick for Impact. I really do, because people are going to say, well, I have to see both ends of this now, where this is going. And if they can get one or two people to capture the imagination of the fans who are watching AEW, they may turn over to Impact on Tuesday night and say, oh, I like this wrestler. So I think, I think it's better for Impact. Sting returns. Now, again, I'm not trying to put a wet blanket on any of this. This is a big move for Impact, getting a huge name. However, if the WWE had done this, you're not going to convince me that fans wouldn't say, oh, my God, they're going back to 60-year-old wrestlers again. I thought it was about building the future, and here we go with has-beens. That's what you would have said. I'm telling you, that's what people would have said. Here goes WWE again. Why don't they just see if they can bring back the Briscoe brothers? Yeah, I mean, that's what it would be. AEW does it? Oh, it's Sting, as if it's the Sting from 25 years ago. It's not. It's not. Is it a big deal that you got a huge name? Yeah, it is. Is it also belying everything that you told the fans you were going to be about? Yes, it is, because you said, we're not going to do that. Only WWE does that. We don't like that. We don't like that when WWE hires old wrestlers who are past their prime to come back in and steal the thunder from the young guys. That's why we left and formed our own company. Well, and now you're hiring them to do exactly the same, because Sting ain't there to lay down. I mean, he might lay down to some top guy. He ain't laying down to your young talent, I bet. So now what? So is this a good move? I guess it is in terms of publicity, Mike. But in terms of sticking to what they promised AEW fans, I would say that, I mean, I'd have been better suited if they brought in Brock Lesnar. At least he can still go.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, Sting is also coming off an injury, a pretty major injury at that. But it also makes sense because of TNT, you know, WCW. I mean, you look at everybody they brought in, you know. Minus the mascot, the mask commentator. I mean, Jim Ross was WCW at one point. So was Schiavone. Those guys. So it makes sense. And the way they used him made sense because, you know, they had him come in and basically make the save for Cody Rhodes, who Sting worked with and for Rhodes' dad, and so right. That made sense. I get what you're saying about it, but the way they used him made sense.
Well, here's what I don't want to happen, and this is probably going to be a little controversial. I'm sure I'm going to get some hate mail for this, but when I see Tony Khan and I hear him talk, here's the first thing that comes to my mind. Here is an ultra, ultra, ultra rich guy, or his daddy's rich, at least, so by proxy he's rich, who's a huge wrestling fan, and he's playing action figure federation with real people. In other words, he's not some hard-nosed promoter somewhere saying, I'm going to turn a profit on this, I love, you know, the business and this, that, and the other thing. No, he's a fan. He's almost a money mark. You know what a money mark is? A money mark is a guy who has enough money to get together a federation and hire wrestlers to wrestle because they've either A, always wanted to be a wrestler, or B, they love wrestling, and it's just a way to spend their money. but it's not somebody who's like dedicated to the business. It's not someone who's just like, wow, I paid my dues in this business. I've come up and I've been a worker. I've been a, you know, producer. I've been this, I've been that. And now I'm going to have my own federation. You could say the same thing about Billy Corgan. This is what I see when I see Tony Khan. This is a guy who just seems to be, I want to be around the wrestlers and I'm cool. He's not cool. He's a little nerdy dude, you know, who same way with Billy Corgan, right? Okay, Corgan's a rock star, but he's still a nerdy dude. And they seem to be like money marks who just, you know, Vince McMahon grew up in the business. His father owned the WWE. He literally was raised on it. And there are other promoters who were raised on it, you know, the Jarretts and other people who really have like it in their blood. And then you go to Billy Corgan and you go to Tony Khan, and it seems like what they have is they have money and they're wrestling fans. And they say, oh boy, I guess I can maybe swing a wrestling federation of my very, very own. And truthfully, this is why you get these things where, oh, I guess I'll collect Sting. He's a legend. Guess I'll collect this one. He's a legend. And it's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm way off base on this, Mike, but this is what I feel when I look at Tony Khan and to a lesser extent, Billy Corgan.
Well, to some extent, you could probably say the same thing about Ted Turner when he got his hands on WCW. You know, and what did he do? The first thing he did is he called Vince McMahon, and I got me a wrestling company or something to that effect. You know, the same thing you could probably say for Dixie Carter when she was running Impact. All right, she didn't buy Impact. Her father or her parents or something did it, and they gave it to her, and it was her baby at one point, right? So basically, she's another one. She's basically the nerdy girl in that situation. The nerd, you know, that Billy Corgan and the rest of these guys that you mentioned are. Yeah, so I get that, and you know, like we said, Billy Corgan could have. Been more than a nerd had he put some people in the building, you know. It might have been a risk, but it would have been a good risk in our mind. But hey, that's neither here nor there. But yeah,
it would have been a worthwhile statement at least. I agree with you on Dixie Carter. I disagree on Ted Turner. I'll tell you why. Ted Turner had his own broadcasting company. Ted Turner had every reason in the world to want to have a wrestling show on his company, even if he despised wrestling. Which he didn't. He liked wrestling, but even if he despised it, he could take a look at the ratings and say, wow, if I had a wrestling show, I might be able to pull in these kind of ratings. So he had an ulterior motive. He had his own television network. So that was his ulterior motive, is let me get ratings for my network. And what did he do? He hired Eric Bischoff, who was, you know, pretty much ingrained for a long time in the business to run it. He didn't hire some dude who doesn't know what he's doing. Now, I know a lot of people could say, well, Tony Khan doesn't do all this stuff. It's Cody Rhodes and the guys who know what they're doing. That's true. But Tony Khan seems to be the guy who's pulling the string here. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. But when I hear Tony Khan in an interview, and he looks like he's going to teach me science class, and he's talking about wrestling as if he's grew up in the business and understands every aspect of it, I'm now an owner of it, and I can tell you unequivocally, no, you can't, Tony. You know, leave that to Cody. Leave that to these other guys. Let them be the spokesman. All Tony Khan should say is, look, I'm an investor in AEW. I put the money up, true, and I oversee the finances and the business end of it, but the wrestling end of it is Cody Rhodes and company. You got wrestling-related questions, ask them. But Tony Khan's ego won't let him do that, see? So that's where I have a problem with it. aside from that, I mean, if he wants to go and hire Sting to do a program, fine. But and Sting is saying, I've had my surgery and I'm better than I ever was. Yeah, well, here's the problem, though, Sting. You weren't hurt initially when you took on Seth Rollins and you were out of gas in 40 seconds. And you're 4 years younger. So I don't know. I honestly don't know how that's going to work. If it's done just for publicity, then I guess you got your money's worth at the publicity, because we're talking about it and the internet's buzzing about it. But I just wanted to make the point that if WWE had Sting walk back into that company, we would have never heard the end of it from wrestling fans saying, here we go again. They hired another washed-up guy who can't get it done in the ring because they have no talent of their own to put forward. That's what we would have heard. AEW does it, it's fine. It's fine. See, you have to be honest. And what's good for one is good for the other. If you didn't want Sting in WWE because you think he's taken away the young people's airtime and whatever, then he shouldn't be in AEW either. Because there's a lot more to build up in AEW than there is in WWE. Todd, what do you think about the Sting debut?
Like he said, the same thing. It's. I think they're just doing it for ratings. And, you know, like you said, with Sting, and he just did it just to put people over and also showcase, too.
Well, it is for ratings. I mean, again, the publicity might be worth it. We'll see what Sting does. I mean, I know he's not going to be on every week wrestling. He's not going to do that. He's not going back to a full-time schedule at his age. If you can get one or two decent things out of him, I mean, we'll see. I just wish wrestling fans were fair, and if you're going to give WWE hassle for one thing, then you got to play fair and give AEW hassle when they do the same exact thing. Now, over to the WWE, because we got quite a bit of news here. First news is apparently Bruce Pritchard, who was doing both shows, Raw and SmackDown for a while, was not very well appreciated backstage by a lot of the wrestlers. A lot of the wrestlers were saying they felt like they were going to be lost in the shuffle, that Pritchard was writing specifically for just people he liked. There was no explanation of why you're not being used on television or what your future might hold. There was a lot of anxiety backstage. And apparently Triple H had been supplementing while Bruce Pritchard was away or taking a little time, and that tension kind of relieved, and people said, we'd rather work this way. Apparently Triple H was instrumental in a couple of the big angles like Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And now we're beginning to see perhaps Bruce Pritchard, who Vince McMahon thinks the world of, losing favor with the people backstage. Instead, Triple H kind of currying the favor. Now, a fan brought it to my attention. I thought it was funny. We were talking about when I first started this show years ago. I told you that Triple H had a long-term plan to basically have NXT be the number one federation and phase out WWE because he created NXT. He did not create WWE. He'd never be able to live up to Vince McMahon's legacy, and he would like to see it all merge into one big Triple H production. And a fan had said to me, well, what do you think's going on right now? He's currying favor with all the wrestlers. He's calling all of his pay-per-views takeovers. How much obvious can it be? Takeover what? What are you taking over? If not the WWE. I thought that was an interesting point. Now we hear that because of this Impact invasion, that WWE may now invade Impact instead of Impact invade WWE. Well, we had said a couple of weeks back that they're going to have to use an influx of WWE talent if they want to bring their ratings up on NXT on Wednesday nights, and apparently this is the idea, is that various WWE stars will be, I guess, invading Impact, or they're thinking at least about doing it. I caution against this. I'll tell you why I'd be the guy raising my hand saying no if I'm in the meeting room. There's no logical reason for the WWE's top guys and big stars to be invading a program that is supposed to be for guys waiting to be called up to the main roster. Now, if you want to send a couple people down there, not invading, just saying I am now on this roster, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I'm not for an invasion angle of WWE saying, we feel threatened by you, so we're invading you. Why are you threatened by NXT? They're getting 600,000 people watching them on a weekly basis. You're getting 1.6 million. So you're threatened by them how? Why would you do it? It makes no sense. Impact invading Raw made sense, or SmackDown, that made sense. That made perfect sense. Because what they were basically saying is, you know, we want the big spotlight. We want the attention and the ratings and stuff. I get that. I'm all for that. But I don't know, Mike. I don't think the WWE and their workers should be invading NXT.
Right. It's like you said, especially, I mean, numbers don't lie. I mean, and we'll probably get into this in a little while, but why would you be invading, like you said, a place that barely gets 700,000 on the high side when their main competition is getting 850, and now we're latest thing is 915,000, you know,
right,
in terms of ratings. Why would you want to do that? What would it benefit the WWE to do that? You know, now if you want to have NXT invade WWE, that's different. All right.
Right.
That's different. But
I agree with that. Then I'd be good with that. But I'm not good with WWE for the reasons you said. I'm not good with WWE invading NXT. As far as the ratings are concerned, yes. AEW went up substantially. Now, they had a big show. Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley, you know, big rumors that Sting was showing up. That's going to help. But still, they did it. It doesn't matter how they did it. And that's all that counts. If they can pull this off on a regular basis, God bless them. But they have shown that if they put all of their effort into it and they do a special show, they can creep up on that 1 million mark. I mean, they had more than that on their first episode, obviously, because everybody was curious, but they could creep up on that 1 million mark again. And that's got to be worrisome to the WWE to some degree. It's got to be worrisome. And I have to tell you that Sting making his re-debut in AEW makes me think back to WrestleMania when there was no reason in the world for Triple H to go over on Sting in his very first match ever at WrestleMania and in WWE, but he does because he's Triple H. It makes me wonder if you had treated him and said, no, I think you should go over. This is your first match, very special. Maybe he would have gave a little more consideration to saying, I don't know, let me see if the WWE wants to at least talk to me before I accept this AEW offer. You know? At the time, Sting blew it off and said, no, it's fine, it's good, it's fine. But we all know it's not good and it's not fine, and I said it when it happened. There's no reason in the world, if you think for 1 minute, that if I was in Triple H's position, and I finally got Sting after all these years, to be at WrestleMania, that special moment, here is Sting in his very first WrestleMania ever. If I wouldn't have let him go over, you're insane. Of course I would have. If he had come to me himself and said, well, you know, it's your company, and I turned down your offers for I don't know how long, and I understand you want to make, like, WWE is best, so I think you should go over. I still would have said, oh, no, I'm not going over. This is your big moment here. This is it, this piece of history. I've went over a million times at various events. This is your time. That's what a Triple H should have done. Unfortunately, he didn't. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, sometimes you have to treat people certain ways if you expect them to be, I don't want to say loyal because, I mean, you go where the money is, but you expect them to at least be cognizant of the fact that you showing up somewhere could hurt them. I mean, Jericho did. Jericho called Vince McMahon and said what offer he had. He knew Vince couldn't match it or wasn't going to match it, but at least he said it. So, I mean, at that stage of the game, Mike, it makes me hearken back to that moment in history where we all, I think, were in agreement that Triple H kind of blew the call there.
Right, he blew the call. And, look, this was before Sting got injured, and this was before we figured out that he couldn't get the job done, you know, before – obviously, he started to show his age later on in his stay with the WWE, and really, he should have went over on him. That would have helped Sting out. That would have, you know. I don't know if it was ego or whatever that didn't let him do it. But hey, you know, that it is what it is, And that's the thing. And look, there have been rumors that Sting's son wants to get into the business, and he is training right now. Now, had WWE done the right thing and Sting go over, there's a possibility you could have gotten 2 for 1. You know, you could have got, what essentially is Sting and the replacement for Sting, you know, his son. But again,
yeah, I mean, they're doing it with Rey Mysterio, right? They're doing it with Rey Mysterio and his son. Yeah, listen, sometimes things come back to bite you in the ass. I think the WWE's made a couple of those critical things. I think that they had it to do it over again, Sting would have went over. And I think if they had it to do it over again, The Undertaker would have never lost his streak. There are certain things that I think they called and then they realized, bad deal. They do that far too often. Now, one of these could be this week's Raw, because apparently there were some heated. Now, if you go onto some of these other blogs or whatever, you'll hear, no, there was just some disagreement and on the direction. And both people were being stubborn about it. No, I heard it got heated. Okay, my sources told me it got heated. Because Bruce Pritchard apparently had come up with this, the Fiend's one weakness is going to be Alexa Bliss. That's his weakness. And some people are saying even Bray Wyatt himself said this is a dumb idea. I don't like it. Because it's been done before where his one weakness was Sister Abigail and Randy Orton exploited that. And now you're going to do the same exact thing with Alexa Bliss. And that's dumb because if his weakness is, I guess what they were trying to say, if his weakness is Alexa Bliss and he really cares about her that much, then why in the world is Nikki Cross trying to get her away from someone who truly apparently is in love with her? It doesn't make sense. In order for this angle to make sense, Bray Wyatt has to have just be using Alexa Bliss as a play toy. I have her under my control. She can do what I want. She's a peon. I don't really care what happens to her. If you care what happens to her to the point of it looking like it's a romantic thing almost, then you've blown the Nikki Cross angle. So a lot of people were screaming, you don't want to do this to the Fiend. A, you're making him too much of a face, and he's not really supposed to be a face. Nikki Cross is the face, and she's trying to fight to get her best friend away from a guy who's a heel, right? So now why are you trying to make him a face and ruining that angle just to get over a Randy Orton feud where Orton's already the heel? It doesn't matter. So I heard it got heated, and I heard there was very, very, very much dissension in the ranks and that Bray Wyatt was not happy doing it. That's what I heard. And I don't blame him, because this is a convoluted mess. an absolute convoluted mess. Had the Nikki Cross angle worked out, the idea behind it is Nikki Cross is saying, I don't care if Alexa Bliss looked like she was playing me. I still say for a moment or two, that was the real Alexa Bliss crying for help. Bray Wyatt's an evil man. He's got her under a spell, and I'm going to get her away from him. But you can't do that if Bray Wyatt is emotionally invested in Alexa Bliss so much that he has to come out and force Randy Orton to hand them to her because, God forbid, any harm comes to her. See, because now Nikki Cross's argument is destroyed. No harm's going to come to Alexa Bliss, apparently. She's being protected by one of the more fierce competitors in the WWE, so why is she worried about her safety? The exact opposite should have been true if you wanted Bray Wyatt to be the heel. He should have been like, go ahead, do whatever you want to her. That's all. I mean, if I was booking this and you wanted to get it, I guess what you would call a compromise, then I would have had Bray Wyatt appear on the monitor and say, oh, no. Nikki Cross is in trouble, huh? Apparently, Randy Orton would strike a woman. But just know this, Randy. I can't come down there and stop you. But anything you do to her, I think he's going to take exception to that, and he might end up doing worse to you. So have fun with her, but just remember that anything you do, probably going to come back twice on you. And then if Randy Orton thought about it for a minute and put her down and just kind of walked out of the ring like, okay, that's not good, then we get the idea. He prizes her as a possession, but he doesn't care about her safety. He said, go ahead, beat her up if you want. It's just that you're going to get it worse for doing it because you're playing with my toys. You're breaking my toys. But when you come down there like you're saving your girlfriend, that's bad. And that's why Bray Wyatt did not want to do it, Mike, and I do not blame him. I think it was a huge, colossal mistake in his character development.
Right, and that's the thing. And we said it before with this whole thing. This is basically the Joker and Harley Quinn. And yep. If you go back, Harley Quinn came from the Batman, the animated series thing. And the way they wrote that relationship, it was basically spousal abuse. Okay, that's the way they wrote the relationship in that cartoon. Okay, it was basically spousal abuse, and I mean, I know that the WWE don't want to write it that way. It would have made sense if they had, because then you could have Nikki Cross saying, "Look, I cannot. I know he's got you under your thing, but I can see that he's abusing you. He's, you know, this, that, and the other. And
right.
And I'm going to get you. I'm going to save you. Now, I may not be able to take him on, but I'll go get somebody that can, and I can get you some help, you know.
That, yeah, because if he just appeared and said, look, Randy, I don't like children who break my toys. So if you're considering breaking one of my toys, understand that there are consequences when you break one of my toys. There's worse consequences when you break one of his. Then that would have been very clear that, well, she's just a toy. He doesn't really care about her. She's just a plaything. That makes him a bad guy, and Randy Orton maybe a worse guy. But nonetheless, they're both bad guys. But it would also conflict Bray Wyatt with The Fiend a little, where Bray Wyatt could say, if it was up to me, I'd come down there and save you, but he doesn't want me to. And I can't really, you know, I can't really blame him. I mean, you know, you're his and he's yours. Then you would say, wow, there's even a conflict between Bray Wyatt. Maybe the sweater vest Bray Wyatt has a soft spot, but The Fiend Bray Wyatt does not. And there's some conflict. At least there's some interest there. This looked awful with this just coming down and holding his arms out to pass Alexa Bliss to him. That's, God have mercy. What are you trying to do? And apparently Bruce Pritchard is saying, we're trying to get The Fiend to be the clear face in this feud with Randy Orton. No, Bruce, You don't need him to be the clear face. He's already – Alexa's in a feud with Nikki Cross, who's a clear face, trying to save her from a villain. So you can't do that. There is no clear face, really, in that matchup. Randy Orton wronged Bray Wyatt when he burnt down his shack. This is Randy Orton's final comeuppance here. Doesn't mean Bray Wyatt's a nice person. It means Bray Wyatt is a vengeful man, and Randy Orton picked on the wrong person. But this whole thing with Alexa Bliss shouldn't fit into it. He didn't do anything to Alexa Bliss. So it should be that, yes, he's an evil dude who is using this girl as a play toy and messing with her mind, but we're still going to root for him against Randy Orton because Randy deserves it. After Randy Orton, then we'll see what ends up happening with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, and then we'll decide whether we're going to root for Bray Wyatt or not. That's the way this has to be handled. No, of course not. Todd, it doesn't make any sense because, once again, how does Nikki Cross fit into this as a face trying to help her friend if Bray Wyatt is legitimately protecting her friend?
You're absolutely right there, like you said, about the Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt thing. And it looks like they try to act more of a face of Bray Wyatt. We don't want him doing that face thing as the Fiend, but him doing the sweater vest gimmick, that more like a soft spot there for him and Alexa Bliss as well.
Right. You know what this would be like, Mike? It would be like if Roman Reigns came down and saved Jey Uso every time Jey Uso was in trouble and gave him a big hug and saying, you know, dude, you're my cousin. I love you. I love you. I love you. No, he doesn't do that, does he? He yells at him and says, even when he does good things, oh, you did it wrong, or you embarrassed me, or you did this. That's because they want to clearly show that Roman Reigns is on an ego trip and he doesn't really have Jey Uso's best interests at heart. He thinks he does, or he pretends he does, but he doesn't. That's why they don't do that. So why would you do it with Bray Wyatt, Mike? It doesn't make a lick of sense.
You wouldn't. You know, I mean, look, we said that originally Bray Wyatt was basically what they were trying to, what they did with Kevin Sullivan, right? And basically you had the same sort of dynamic with Kevin Sullivan and, well, who would eventually become woman, lady that would eventually become woman, you know? You know, in terms of he seemed to have a hold over her that nobody could break, right? Kevin Sullivan.
Yes.
So that was the dynamic there. It's almost the same dynamic. You know, we saw her come out of it for 10 seconds or whatever it was that she came out of it, right? So,
right.
Yeah, we saw her come out of it. But it didn't last. That story hasn't been fully told yet.
No, it hasn't, and it's being told wrong now. And I agree with the people who stood up and said this is a bad mistake. We shouldn't show this. It was definitely not the right move. Definitely not. And I don't think fans are going to be happy with it. And apparently Bray Wyatt wasn't happy with it, which is not good because Bray Wyatt so far has been given a lot of leeway to kind of take his character in the direction he wants. And once you give someone that leeway and then you start saying, but you're going to do this. Well, I don't want to do that. Well, you're still going to. That kind of cuts your legs out from underneath you and you're like, why am I trying? You know what I mean? And then what happens? Then what happens? As far as the rest of Raw was concerned, you know, I think it was pretty substandard. It was what it was. I don't think there's anything earth-shattering about it. Apparently, we got this weird thing now with Drew McIntyre's always coming out with his sword. And from what I hear, apparently Triple H and Stephanie had given Vince McMahon that sword. as a gift. And Vince said we could incorporate it into this angle. And I thought it would probably just be for that one big match, but apparently now they're going to do it all the time. I don't know. I don't know if this works. I'm saying it doesn't, unless there's a payoff somewhere or it gets broken or stolen or I don't know what. The Miz, we knew this was a mistake, giving The Miz the Money in the Bank briefcase. This is really didn't work out, did it? This year's Money in the Bank was a disaster. Let's face it. It was a disaster. How did that turn out for everybody? Terrible. Absolutely terrible. It led to no really good angles. Nothing really major going on. And it's pretty much a bust. Pretty much a bust. As far as Ricochet losing to Slapjack, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. At least Braun Strowman apparently really was injured and he's not coming back because we got that match that, as advertised, and AJ Styles won, thankfully. That was definitely the right move. And I'll tell you what else was definitely the right move that a lot of people aren't talking about. Drew McIntyre right afterwards saying, this is going to be a great match. I don't have any personal problem with AJ Styles. He's a great wrestler. And he wants the title, which I don't blame him for wanting the title. That's what we all want. So this will be great. I have no animosity toward AJ Styles. I think this is going to be an awesome match. And then AJ Styles attacks him. Because now you've clearly, see, you've muddied the waters with AJ Styles a little bit, where some people are saying, he's not acting much like a heel anymore, is he? I mean, he tried to get the team together as a captain. He was trying to do the right thing. He's not being quite as villainous as he usually is. Well, you made the right move. If you're going to keep him a heel, you made the right move. I'm not sure you made the right move with Matt Riddle saying he's friends with his bodyguard. I don't know what the hell that's all about. And if Matt Riddle could get any more annoying, I just don't know how. Other than if somehow he could reach right through the television set and poke you in the eye, that would be about the only way Matt Riddle could be more annoying. This ridiculous, goofy Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is really, really, really annoying. And it's not going to – I'm telling you right now, if they're thinking about putting that U.S. championship on him, this is a gigantic mistake. Gigantic. Because for every one person that I hear from who says I'm a Matt Riddle fan, there are four I hear from who says he's the most annoying guy walking. I don't know why you don't make him a heel. I just don't know why you don't make him a heel. He is two steps off becoming R-Truth as far as the comedic thing and just chasing a 24/7 belt around. That's, if you start being that comedic, like Santino Marella. Remember when Santino Marella first came in? He wasn't comedic at all. And then what ended up happening? He became a comedy act. Some other WWE wrestlers do that too. They're very serious when they first come in, then they're a comedy act. And usually that spells trouble for your career. Usually that spells bad things, Mike. I think Matt Riddle is, 6 months away from being that guy.
Right. I think so too. And to tell you the truth, if I'm Matt Riddle, I know he's probably too dumb to think this way, but if I'm Matt Riddle, I'd be pissed, because I thought I was going to be a serious guy. Now, granted, for him to be a serious guy, he'd have to tweak that, Spicoli, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, attitude.
Yeah.
Basically, what he's doing is he's trying to be a poor man's Rob Van Dam, and Rob Van Dam is a more serious wrestler than that,
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. He's definitely trying to be a poor man's Rob Van Dam, but he's also trying to do his surfer dude, stoner guy to the nth degree, and it's dated, and it's annoying. And it's not making him any fans. I don't think he's making him any fans. I just don't. So what was Raw this week? Well, you know, listen, I'll give props for the three-man match because that was a good match. And I think the right guy won. Keith Lee hasn't earned it yet. He'll get there. Hasn't earned it yet. Matt Riddle, I would have rather seen R-Truth fight for the title than Matt Riddle. So AJ Styles by proxy is definitely the right choice, and I think that'll be a really good match, by the way. I think these two guys will put on a really, really good match. These are two guys who have the exact same mentality when it comes to professional wrestling. Very consummately professional, understands what needs to get done to put on a great match, understands the nuances of the game. It'll be a very, very, very good match, in my opinion. So we'll see where this goes. As far as the thing with Lana and Asuka, I don't know where this is going. And to be honest with you, I'm losing interest in it already. If you're going to do something with Lana, I just think you should just do it on her own. There just has to be some point where Lana gets better. You know what I mean? Or Lana does something on her own. I would love to see, if this is the case, I would love to see Asuka do a series of skits with Lana where she's literally training her, but she's training her like dead serious, where nothing's funny. And Lana's just getting adapting a whole new attitude where she doesn't come out like the airheaded blonde girl who cries at the drop of a hat anymore. You know, and say, whoa, Lana changed. And it wasn't because Asuka showed her a few moves. It was because Asuka changed her whole personality. Asuka changed her whole outlook on combat and everything. And she's not that shy, scared little dumb blonde anymore. She's learned some shit. That would work. But just this lucking out and stuff, this is not working for me, Todd. And I just think it's undermining Lana's career later when Asuka goes back to doing what she does.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Lana gimmick right now, and it's not doing anything for me either. Like you said, it's like going in the circle over and over and over again, like a time warp thing. It's just like at the Twilight Zone.
It's like Groundhog's Day. It's over and over and over again, Mike. And again, I've seen nothing to make it established that Lana's either getting better or has achieved something on her own. And that's what is needed to take her to the next step.
Right. Right. You go back and you look at her as the manager for her husband, right? There was a confidence about her, about that character. It was a scary character, you know, but there was a confidence about her, and it made you believe that at some point, if she did decide to get in her ring at some point, that she could handle herself because of how they played that character. And that goes back to what you were saying about this character. The only thing I can say is they're trying to make her that character that gets lucky. All right? She's an airheaded blonde chick that gets lucky, you know? Now, how's that help her?
It's such a great point you're making. We're going to run over time a little bit because you're right. When she was doing Rusev's, I don't know whether she was his manager or she was just a, I don't know what she was supposed to be when she was Lana, the Russian, you know, whatever, but right. We got the sense that if she really was to get into some combat, she might kick your ass when she was with Rusev originally. She looked one way, but she had that air of confidence and I can take care of myself. And I would have believed her as someone who you say, well, listen, she knows some shit. She gets in there and does some judo or some whatever. She knows how to hurt you. I would have bought that from that Lana. But this Lana just looks like a scared little girl who runs around the ring and says, I know a move or two. Let me run away after I do it. And maybe my partner will help me get lucky. Like, how is that going to make her a superstar a month from now?
Right. And there's a difference between her, who actually does have some athletic ability, and say, let's say Miss Elizabeth, who all she was a pretty face. You know, she played, now she may not have been the dumb blonde, but she was not the girl that you watch her, how she moves, like Lana. You watch how Lana moves, and you can say, all right, she's got some athletic ability. She could possibly get into the ring and do some stuff, you know. Whereas Miss Elizabeth was totally different. She was that, you know, the one she needed saving, in other words.
Miss Elizabeth was the damsel in distress. There's no question. She was the quiet, shy, demure woman who had a raging maniac as her husband. Exactly. So that's what made it the perfect fit. Lana was the one who was controlling Rusev's fury. She was up there standing on the thing saying, Rusev, crush, you know, and then he would go do it. And obviously Rusev had some kind of respect for her, or some kind of fear even, for what she could do one way or the other to him if he didn't follow orders. So she was, yeah, this very domineering, confident, almost deadly in a sense, person. And then she went from that to this, what we see, Mike. And what we see now is more like you're saying. It's more like Miss Elizabeth that they made her get in the ring. Just, I'll do a move and run and hope my tag team partner or somebody saves me. This is not going to work. So for this reason alone, I have to give Raw a middling grade again. I'm going to go with a flat C. I just don't think it was that special. What's your thoughts?
I got to give her a flat C. Got to give her a flat C too. And furthermore, the original Lana character, basically, I think that character was based on the Brigitte Nielsen character from Rocky IV.
Yes.
Or Rocky IV.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No doubt in my mind about that. Zero doubt in my mind about that. And yeah, I mean, if there was ever a time you were going to branch her out and make her something, now I get it. She's more accessible now. She's more like, she wouldn't have been a fan favorite under that guise, obviously. Now she's more fan favorite, but you got to make her. In other words, what Lana has to do is have that moment where she changes a little bit. And if you're going to put Asuka into this mix, everyone knows that Asuka is supposed to be the deadliest striker and one of the more serious threats in the world of professional wrestling as far as her skill. So if Asuka was to take her under her wing and say, I'm going to learn you to be different person, not so much as a fighter, just as a person, we could see that transformation where Lana comes out with more confidence, with more ability, and shuts some people up. That would be more like the Karate Kid, right? So if you're going to borrow from films, you've already borrowed from Rocky IV, you might as well borrow from the Karate Kid and have Asuka be Mr. Miyagi, I guess, and go teach her some shit. So when she comes back, she's not a joke. Then at least you have someone in that division who could be popular. Lana could be popular, but you got to make people forget about this whole thing with Bobby Lashley first, which they still haven't, by the way. And you've got to put her in situations other than Nia Jax keeps putting me through a table, because that doesn't help either. Todd, what's your ratings this week?
I got to go to the same grade with you, the same grade as well.
So, listen, another mediocre show, really, right? I don't know what we're expecting tonight. This could be interesting. We'll see where the Daniel Bryan thing goes tonight. This is what I'm watching for. We obviously got Kevin Sullivan. We were talking about him. Kevin Owen. We obviously got Kevin Owen on deck for Roman Reigns. So I think that they're going to switch Daniel Bryan out to be more about Sami Zayn. But after what happened with Jey Uso, we'll see if maybe we're going to get some kind of a Jey Uso and Roman Reigns tag team against Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan or something. Anything's possible. SmackDown's been the superior show for most of the weeks. Last week it slipped a little, so I'm hoping it picks back up tonight. And we'll be back here on Sunday to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat.